Hello, dental online trainers, and welcome to the Dental Online Training Sharecast. I'm your host, Dr. Dennis Hartley. Each month, we'll talk with dental experts who are doing amazing work in the world of dentistry. Also, occasionally, I'm going to throw in a few of my solo bonding sharecasts, where I share a little with you about what I've learned along the way during my career. So tune in the first Tuesday of every month to hear the latest episodes. Hey, Dental Online Trainers, welcome back. We are on to our second part of our conversation with Dr. Brian Lesage. If you have not listened to part one, I encourage you to go back and listen to that. Otherwise, here we go, the continuation of our conversation with Dr. Brian Lesage. You were out in California when you started going through the AACD stuff. So what was it that motivated you to head out to California, and how did you get started out there?
So I practiced in Washington, D.C., from 84 to 90. And in 1990, I just got itchy to get back to California. My family was in Northern California. I had a sister in Southern California. And I just had a drive to get back here. And so I put some feelers out, mostly in Southern California. I actually applied to a couple of dental schools. Like UCSF offered me a position, and wasn't exactly what I wanted. I forget what it was, but it wasn't what I really wanted. It wasn't like in the restorative department. I forget where it was. Some obscure
diagnosis or something.
And so one of my mentors at the residency program, I reached out to all of these people that I knew, and she said, "Brian, there's a practice for sale in Beverly Hills." "Really?" She goes, "Yeah, you should get it." I said, "Well, do you want it?" And she goes, "Well, they wanted me to take it over, but I really don't want it." She was practicing in Santa Monica. Santa Monica is a very nice area. Santa Monica,
sure.
Beverly Hills, these are all Century City. These are all very nice areas here in Los Angeles, very upscale neighborhoods. And I said, "Are you sure, Mary Lou? You sure you don't want this?" No, "Brian, you can have it." "Okay." And so she gave me the connection to the gentleman, kind of interesting story, the gentleman that owner of the practice was actually driven by his, they had one gal offices here in Beverly Hills. So one gal, like we were talking earlier, did the
front. So a dental assistant, receptionist,
yep.
Just did everything.
Did everything. Okay. And so that's very, very common here in Beverly Hills. He had a casting well. He did his own gold work. Okay. Which was kind of interesting. I used the casting well to make jewelry. That's what I did with it.
Yeah,
I
was sure.
For the fun of it.
I know someone who still has a casting well in their practice, and they still do casting. So yeah. So
I reached out to the woman. She says, I was going to be in Los Angeles. I forget why I was coming here, but I was going to be in Los Angeles and probably to look to transition. And she goes, "Okay." She goes, "Come by the practice." So I put a suit on, tie on, have my little resume, "Hi." Handed my resume, and she, it was very interesting. She opened up the envelope. I had a nice stationery, my stationery from Washington, D.C. She read my resume. She looked at me. She was a Texas gal, and she looked at me. She was 75 or so. Lovely lady. Dottie was her name. And she goes, "You're it." I go, "Excuse me?" She goes, "Yeah." She goes, "You're it. You're the one I want to take over the practice." It was her husband, the one gal, the dental assistant, yeah, receptionist, drove her husband, unfortunately, God rest his soul and bless him, but drove him from the office to the hospital. Unfortunately, he never left the hospital. He passed away. He had chronic leukemia. And so he worked till his, 2 weeks before he passed away.
Wow.
You know what a lot of dentists do. We love our career,
sure,
so much,
right?
That we do that. And so Dottie said, "Hey, just look around." And there was Vicky, the one gal. And I'm talking to her. She goes, "I'm going to leave." She goes, "You do whatever you want here. How about we do this?" He goes, "This is a big move probably for you. Give me a call later on tonight or tomorrow with your answer." And I'm sitting,
wow,
going, with my answer. Now, I had just worked 5 years. You think about it, Dennis. I've just worked 5 years in Washington, D.C. to set up my practice. And I actually had a practice that was actually generating a little bit of money that I could live off of. And I had all my good friends from dental school there. So I had a great support system. Here I was going to move to Southern California. I had a sister here. I did have one sister here. And I love my sister to death. I have five of them, but this one's really special to me. And So I said, okay. She goes, because if you want to take over the practice, she goes, I want you to meet my husband.
Okay.
Okay.
He's in the hospital.
And he's in the hospital. I said, okay. And so I said, so I poked around a practice. You know, it was a very old practice. I said, did this patient just get their teeth cleaned? So I'm looking at the bite wings, you know, and she goes, the chart, you know, they're all paper, a little tiny chart.
Sure,
goes,
of course.
He had his teeth cleaned, you know, 3 months ago. And there's calculus all on the x-rays.
Sure.
And stuff. And yeah. I'm going, whoa, I'm buying a perioperosteal practice. This is right up early, man. I couldn't ask for a better practice.
Right. All this untreated needed dentistry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Goldman.
I go, okay, you know, and I'm looking and asking her questions. She was a delightful young lady. And so I called up Dottie and said, okay, Dottie, I'm interested. I'm not saying yes, I'm going to buy the practice, but I'm definitely interested. She said, okay, what time do you leave tomorrow? I told her, she goes, okay, you show up at the hospital 7 o'clock at the nursing station, 5 West or whatever. I don't remember exactly what that
is. Right.
And I knew, okay, this is a Texas lady. I know what I have to do here. So yeah. I was at that nursing station at 6 or 7. I think it was 6 o'clock, but I was at that station standing there, you know, and I see her walk out of a room. I mean, it was 6 o'clock.
I'm the dot.
She's walking out of the room and she looked up and you could see her smile. Like, this is the kid I want to take over to practice. He's timely. You know, he really understands what he
respectful.
Needs to do. Yeah. Good word. Great word. Respectful. Yeah. And so she said, listen, I know this is going to be a difficult, you know, meeting for you. my husband is ill. I gave him your resume. He read it and he smiled at me and he gave me a thumbs up. He goes, so this is it. You know?
Wow. How about that?
That's so
crazy.
And she goes, I'll whisk you in the room and whisk you out. I said, okay. So she took me in the room, you know, and said, hi, doctor. And he said hi to me. And I sort of shook his hand as best I could. He had, you know, IVs and stuff. And
sure.
And chatted with him for, you know, which felt like an hour. I mean, you know, but it was 10 minutes. It was probably five to 7 minutes on. It didn't feel like an hour, but it felt like, you know, a long time. You know, wow, what a moment in someone's career, because he had practiced here in the office. It's upstairs in the building. I moved downstairs to a bigger suite after 10 years or so. But, you know, he'd been here 60 years, something like that.
Wow.
You know, he's handing me his baby. I mean, what a moment. And the wife is as sweet as can be to me. And so she whisked me out of the room and she stands up. We go to the nursing station. She's okay. How long do you need to make your decision? I said, a month.
And she hasn't even talked about price or anything. Do you know the price of the practice or anything at this point?
No.
Yeah. All right.
No. Yeah. She says, I'll make it very fair for you. She didn't need the money. Right. And so she said, she goes, it's going to be a good deal. Okay. And she goes, I'll get you the paperwork. She goes, I'll have you the paperwork in the next 2 days. And so I said, I told her 30 days. And she says, 1 week. And I sit there and go, okay, Dottie, 1 week. And so I get the paperwork and, you know, very fair evaluation for the practice.
Sure.
It was a very small practice. I mean, honestly,
sure.
It was,
you know, right.
He was weaning away. He was working part-time. Yeah. And but my buddy, one of my closest friends from dental school says, Brian, you're paying too much. Paying too much. I said, really? That's too much? And she was giving it to me interest-free 5 years. So split the number five times, you know, interest free. She goes, I don't want your
And back then for our listeners, back then interest rates were double what they are now. I mean, 12, 15, 19%. They were through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I ended up going back, you know, so then I called her. So that was a Wednesday night. So I had till the next Wednesday. And so a Monday night I called her and started to, you know, work around a conversation of, hey, you know, maybe can we negotiate on the price? And didn't say those words, but she stopped me immediately. And she said, Brian, if you're trying to if you're trying to negotiate on the price is what it is. I said, all right, Dottie, very fair. Just trying to have a little bit of sense of humor, because I think sense of humor is so important. I know, Dennis, you got a great sense of humor. I go, does that penalize me in any fashion? Do I still have till Wednesday night to decide? And she said, yes, you do, Brian. I said, okay, thank you, Dottie. I just didn't want to maybe get penalized for right. my, you know, misstep there.
On yeah, yeah. Right, right.
To negotiate. And she said, no, you got till Wednesday. And, you know, the rest is history. We signed the deal. And the crazy part, Dennis, I don't think you know this part of the story. Some of my friends do know this part of the story, which is I look to sell my practice in Washington,
D.C. Sure. Of course.
Some people were giving me some ridiculous offers. And I understood where they're coming from, but I wasn't going to do that. And so I ended up, though, just so you know, I ended up doing dentistry in Washington, D.C. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, got on a plane Wednesday night, flew to Los Angeles, and practice dentistry in my Beverly Hills office now, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and got back That's on a plane crazy. Sunday morning and flew back. And the question, how many weeks did I do that for? And the answer is I did it for 52 weeks.
Wow.
Which was grueling, you know, but I got to know everyone in the airports. The airports were a lot more friendly.
I bet you did.
they knew me. It's like, go ahead, sir. Go ahead. You know, go ahead. We know you.
Yeah.
Got to know some of the stewardesses and stuff. I mean, it was a crazy time of my life, but I'll tell you an interesting part, a really heartwarming part for me was when my patients got wind that I was leaving Washington, D.C. It was very interesting, Dennis, that and I was a young man at the time. You know, I was 6 years out of dental school.
Right.
They would say, remember that crown you wanted to do, Brian, over here? He goes, you do it. And I finally told the gentleman who took over my practice, I said, what? Rick, why are you doing this? I said, throw me out. You don't need me here. Why do you want me here? I said, people are having me do their work. I said, I'll come if you want. Okay. Cause we signed a contract and I'm going to honor my contract, but you should throw me out. I really told him that.
Right. So, cause you're doing all the dentistry he could be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, come on. I did more dentistry that year than, you know, right. any year prior in DC. And I was just, I bought a practice here. There was only 300 patients of record in this practice here. So a very small practice. It was on the second floor. And I remember like a week into the practice, or, you know, second week I was here, whatever, I'd look out the window in the second floor. And in Washington, DC, at rush hour, there's thousands of people, all the government employees, the consultants, sure. thousands of people on the streets, thousands, you know, so it looks like ants, you know, going around.
Right.
And here I look out and I said, Vicky, I said, where do our patients come from? I said, it's rush hour. I don't see anyone on the streets. I'm looking out the window.
Right.
And she goes, oh, doc, no. Patients are going to drive to your practice. I said, oh,
right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Very good. Yeah. So I had business cards, you know, business card, Beverly Hills, Washington, D.C. practice. I'd meet crazy people, not crazy. That's not even fair to say. I'd meet very interesting people on the airplanes, traveling back and forth. Great stories. Listen, I learned business. Just like you, you like to be inquisitive. You know, that's why you do this. It's just kind of, it's fun to chat. My kids, they get embarrassed sometimes because I ask a stranger some question. I said, you're going to remember this when you grow older, when you get a little older, you're going to remember how Baba, they call me Baba, how Baba would ask these questions of people. You're going to do the same thing. I promise you, because my dad did the same thing. And I watched my mom, they'd ask questions. Like, that seemed like a dumb question as a young kid. You know, you go, well, but I ask a lot of interesting questions of people and I come back and tell them stories. When I travel and lecture, I come back with a story to tell them every time. And
that's great.
It could be, I said good morning to the house cleaners in the hotel. And then the lady said, oh, good morning. How are you? And then I stop and I say, you know, I'm doing well. I hope you're having a good day. And we just from that little hello, that little connection, we talk for 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
You made a little difference maybe in this person's day and they made a difference in mine.
That's it, right? Makes a difference in yours, right? The more you give, the more you get.
Absolutely. You know, so here I was, 1990. Arthur Park was my first patient. He was a big time producer. And he talked to me for about 10, 15 minutes, gave me some words of wisdom. My first patient, 8 o'clock, August 16th was my first day here in Beverly Hills. Never forget it. I treat his son still. He passed away a long time ago. His wife passed away, but I treat his son, who's 75 or so now. We laugh about his dad a little bit and such. And he was, everyone, you know, listen, I've been very blessed. I know you feel the same way, but everyone was so kind to me when I moved out here. But I was starting from scratch, you know, and I had, here's a good one. I had orange shag carpet, Dennis. Orange shag carpet in the office. with beads hanging down, you know? So there were beads hanging from the ceiling. It was like, you know, designed in the early 70s. It was a hole in the orange shag carpet. It was like this, you know, and I go, Vicky, there's a hole in the carpet. Yeah, yeah. The building wouldn't buy them new carpet. It was only like 700 square foot office. So I said, the building will buy a carpet. I mean, how much could, you know, so I went and bought some carpet, pulled the crap out, and excuse me, the carpet out. And
well, you know, that orange shag goes with those psychedelics that we were talking about earlier. So yes. Maybe there's something going on there.
Yes.
Cautionary tales when you take over a practice, you walk into this brand new practice and the dentist isn't there to guide you. So you're just jumping in. Now, you had some years experience, but you're not like you had 20 years experience. You're still relatively new dentist. Cautionary tales, any advice?
Yeah. Be yourself, you know, really just be yourself. And I would also say that I'm sure you probably do the similar thing. My philosophy of dentistry, which I learned from my Washington DC associateship, which was to do a 1 hour new patient exam. And so every patient had to do a 1 hour new patient exam of me. And certainly that got in, you know, built on when I was studied under Frank Spear. Yep. And so that 1 hour new patient exam was so crucial. So every patient, which was really challenging because every patient that we got to come back to the practice, which is about 100 of them came back of the 300, everyone is expecting to get their teeth cleaned.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're there to get their teeth cleaned. And I wasn't going to clean their teeth. I was going to give them a new patient exam. And the new patient exam experience, I mean, that's the word I use, and it's important that, you know, your listeners understand that. It really is an experience, is very unique. And I still do the same new patient exam that I started and learned in 1984 from my first associate. I actually use the same forms, which is really crazy.
Wow.
So I still handwrite all my treatment plans. I've got a computer, okay, like everybody else. Yeah. Okay, so it's not like I don't have a computer.
Right.
But I still handwrite them all. And I actually tell a story about my handwritten treatment plans to most of my new patients when I do it. And I tell them I've been using the same form since 1984. And you know that I've actually personally studied your case and written your treatment plan. And I'd say this one other thing. Definitely, I only give them the A treatment plan. There's a lot of practice consultants say, hey, give them A, B, and C options. Never believed in that. I only give them A. They can say, hey, Brian, that's really great. And so every once in a while, certainly they say, that's a great treatment plan, sure. Brian. But I doubt I can afford that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a, you know, and this is something that, you know, you learn, and you've probably done this too, is I learned this from Jimmy Eubanks. I'm going to give Jimmy credit for this.
Jimmy's awesome.
Yeah, was a great influence on me from verbal skill standpoint. And many times patients certainly have a certain budget that they want to, that they need to work within. And if you share Correct. With me, you share with me sort of the budget, the number that you're comfortable spending, that you have allocated for your dental health, for your dental care, I can work a treatment plan around that and really prioritize what's the most important thing that we do here. And we go from there. And you know, most of us aren't comfortable talking about fees. I present the fees to the patients also, especially on my big cases. We call them diagnostic box cases. So, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, whatever the number is, it gets a lot higher here in Beverly Hills. I present all those treatment plans. I don't hide behind an office manager, financial coordinator, these types of things. And those are skills that I had to develop over the years. I would encourage you to try to do the same thing. Because I think, listen, when you need a new deck in your house, okay?
Right.
Let's just say, you know, the contractor comes out, he makes some measurements, and he comes back and says, hey, you know, this is what it costs. It's going to cost me, you know, it's going to cost you $20,000, $40,000, whatever the number is, plus the lumber.
Right.
You don't sit there and have someone else call you. They tell you exactly, you know, because they know how hard they're going to work to get that damn deck on your house, you know.
Yeah, and, that's a good point.
You know, so why do we hide behind financial coordinators and such? I've always taught it that you really should present your own fees. I don't do the financial arrangements. I let them work, do that part
sure. of it.
But I give them the fees, you know, and in my practice, I it's my fee plus a lab fee. So
yeah, we do the same thing.
What lab do they want to use? You know, and again, it comes, unfortunately, I tell most patients many times it comes down to budget. You know, how much money have you allocated and how much do you want to allocate to this? And everyone knows that we're in the middle of a remodel and the remodels, you know, almost doubled what the original estimate was.
Sure. Yeah.
And everyone has experienced that in their lifetime that, you know.
Sure.
Go, oh, I'm going to go buy a used car. I think I can get that for $20,000, probably my used car. And you show up, it ends up being 30 for the one that you want or whatever number, you know.
Right. You know, I think, I don't know that dental schools do a good job in preparing us for that. And I don't know that most people are good at having those conversations that, hey, this is going to be, you know, 10,000, 20, 30, whatever, thousands. So it is something that you got to train yourself. And Mopper was a big, big proponent of just, you know, hey, you know, like you said, I'm the one who's working for this. This is what it's going to cost for me to do it. But I very much like how you ask patients, and I remember that from Jimmy talking about what have you allocated? What's your budget look like? So we can figure out how to triage your dentistry. How do we put things in priority so we can get you taken care of? I think that's for those out there who are trying to get over that hurdle, because it's a huge hurdle for us in dentistry is to be able to have these conversations with the patients so that we can do complete treatment, so we can do more complex dental treatment plans, more than just single tooth dentistry, and not be so reliant on insurances and you know, PPO programs and stuff like that. It's a skill set, and you got to learn how to do it for most of us. Some people are good at it from the beginning. I had to learn how to talk to patients about money for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing that I talked about with my patients, the box of patient charts, was, are you comfortable asking patients for referrals? And that's really where you really want to start. So, many times the easiest way to really do it is, you know, let's say you do a bonding or you do a composite or something, a crown, and you know, wow, that you, God, you did that. I was painless today. Or you have an injection,
right?
That's painless. And it just, you can, as simply and as silly as this is going to sound, You can just ask the question and go, wow, you would you happen to have any other friends or coworkers that you think would like to have some painless dentistry?
Yeah, that's great.
That's simple. Yeah. And then let me tell you what you do. You zip it. Don't keep talking. And that's what a lot of us do, you know. And so I've learned,
right,
you know, the uncomfortable pause, right? The poetic pause. And let them digest what you just said to them. Right? And they go, oh. Yeah, you know, my girlfriend's scared of, you know, going to the dentist, or, you know, my mom is scared, or whatever it is.
Right.
My neighbor, oh, they petrified of the dentist. Yeah, maybe I should think of, say, oh, what's your, you go just, you know, what's your neighbor's name? Just get a name. Oh, because I want to make sure the front desk.
Connect it.
Call. Yeah, exactly. Connection, you know.
Yeah.
When they call, we'll know who they are, and we'll expect, I won't say we expect their call, but yeah, we'll be looking forward to their call. And then the question is, do you train your team members in some of these skills?
No kidding. Right. Okay? For sure.
I'll share a little system that we do here in the office, which is we have our 5-minute meeting at the end of the day. So we go over our schedule at the end of the day. The reason we do that is because, you know, if you have a lab case that isn't in and you find out at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're in trouble.
Okay? That's a bad day. That's a bad day.
Especially if it's your 8 o'clock patient. So, you know,
exactly.
A couple times in my career, and I said, I'm not doing the 5 o'clock morning huddle anymore. That's 5 minutes, excuse me, you know, morning huddle. Just not going to do that. So I made it a 5 minute at the end of the day, which we're, you know, unfortunately we're a little tired sometimes, but you know, I really asked that let's get it done right at 5 o'clock when the office closes. Let's not, you know, delay it. And we actually, so we go over the schedule, and each one of us actually picks a patient that we're supposed to ask to refer someone to us that day.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we do that, Dennis, and maybe you've heard this before, this is something I came up with and no one really taught me this, but it just made sense, is, you know, we all like Dennis when he comes in. Okay. So when Dennis comes in, if the front desk says, hey, Dennis, good to see you. You know, thanks for coming in. Hey, you know, we really, you know, you're such a nice guy. You know, you must have some nice friends that maybe you could send us a patient, you know?
Right.
And then the dental assistant walks you into the room and she likes you too. And she goes, hey, Dennis, you know, so I didn't want a patient to be bombarded. Hygienist asked for a patient. I come in and ask for a patient, whatever. So we all pick a patient. So, and does everyone do it every day? And the answer is absolutely not.
Of course not. Things get busy and you forget.
Yeah. It's maybe
It turned out not to be an awesome experience for the patient. So it's not a good day.
That's true too. Yeah. Yes. That's very important.
We sat them 20 minutes late. Let's not ask them today.
Exactly. And there's a learning curve to that as to who, you know, who to ask, but that's why. And we sometimes say, well, we don't want to ask that person.
Because we do the same thing.
Upset them.
Yeah. We do that in our morning huddles also. We'll identify, you know, on the patient schedule. Hey, who's, you know, what's their experience been looking like? And then where are we going to be asking for? Who's going to be asking so that, like you said, not everybody's asking? And vice versa, is that if we don't assign to one person, then no one will sometimes, because it's like, well, I thought they were going to. Well, I thought they were going to. And so by sort of laying it out, who's going to be asking them, that holds people more accountable, myself included, because quite honestly, I just forget. I get busy in the middle of treatment and then I got to get off the next patient. I just forget. So I need reminders all the time for my team. Like, and we do a little system where we have a little star that is laminated, and my assistant will put that on the screen, the computer screen behind the patient. And that star is, hey, let's ask them for a review or a referral. And so that then when I'm turning around, I'm looking at the patient, the screen's behind, I can see the big star on there. It's like, oh, and don't forget to ask if they wouldn't mind sending one of their favorite people towards us or writing us a nice little comment about us. Yeah. And that helps me significantly. And so that's what we try to do in our practice. So yeah, good advice. Love it. Nice. See, this is real world stuff. This is really about doing dentistry and making it work in practice. I have a question for you. So I've always been curious, what's it like practicing in Beverly Hills? I can't imagine the level of expectations for cosmetic work where you practice, knowing what it's like in Glenview, Illinois. I can't imagine what the expectations are like. And so number one, are the expectations oftentimes unreasonable? And number two, how do you manage that? How do you handle that with the patient, and how do you handle that emotionally?
Yeah, I could tell a lot of stories there. You know, one of them is my wife joined me. She was practicing in West Los Angeles in a practice there for about 7 years. And then when she joined me, she after about the first month, she goes, wow, your patients are crazy. Now, that's not an exact quote, but
I bet it was. Because you know? That's exactly when I joined Mopper, when my partner, Chris, joined me, is like, holy crap, this is these people are a little crazy.
Yeah.
So anyhow, continue on.
Yeah. There's no question, Dennis, they have quite a few of them have very, very unreasonable expectations. And you know, I always say too, you know, I came here with a full set of hair, so you can see what it did to me, a little bit of stress, both. You know, but it's become my daily routine. So it's just going to the office. Honestly, at this point, I'm so experienced at handling what I need to handle. But here's some advice I would tell the listeners, really, which is, and I share this if anyone talks to me about practice management things, concepts, is my number one, this is going to sound a little unusual, but maybe crazy too. My number one objective in my new patient exam, my new patient experience, and my new patient consultation. So I do a new patient exam, collect simple records at appointment, and I have them come back for a 30-minute treatment planning session. We call it co-diagnosis findings, coming out of Dr. Blakely's, information. Mm-hmm. And yeah, co-diagnosis. But my number one objective at these first two meetings is to lower the patient's expectations.
Okay. How do you do that? In what ways do you give us some tangibles?
Okay. So one of the things that I tell them is, I said, dentist, you can evaluate our dentistry at a certain level. And what I mean by that is, you can't expect to take your mirror. Okay, it's my phone I'm taking here, your mirror, and or especially your double two times makeup mirror, and put it this close to your teeth and expect not to be able to see where that restoration is. And I tell them, there's not a dentist ceramist team in the world that can do that. And so I said, where you can evaluate my dentistry, and our dentistry is at a social distance. And so I hold my arm out at full length. And many times what I'll actually even do also, Dennis, is I am in my private office right now. And so the patient's here, I'll actually get up out of my chair and I'll lean over. I know you can't see it, but I'll lean over to them and I'll say, are you comfortable? And I've gotten maybe, you know, this far away from them. And most of them say, no. I said, exactly. And sometimes I say, you know, we're doing something else if we're this close to each other.
Yeah, right. Either dentistry or something else.
Yeah, or closer. And so, you know, that's, there's no way. There's not a dentist. I repeat it again. There's not a dentist ceramist team in the world that these are undetectable at that level. And I think they can be. Personally, I think that our dentistry can be, but I certainly don't want to promise them that. That's my really verbal skill to them. To take the story to the extreme, I had a patient who I did full mouth rehab on her, and she'd come in here with a two-sided mirror, big one, big thing. And finally, I said, Linda, If you come in here with that mirror again, I'm not walking, I'm not stepping in the operatory. Just not going to do it. And so, you know, she would sit on her lap and just to aggravate me. And her husband, I treat also. And she goes, Linda, Ryan's a nice guy. Why do you bring that in and aggravate him? She goes, oh, yeah. He thinks it's funny. I said, you know, the truth of the matter is I don't find it funny anymore. You know,
no.
First time it was, but it's like, I give you my best effort. We talked about that, right? And yep. She knows that, you know, the dentistry she got is really quite incredible, like quite nice dentistry that she got. And, you know, he just goes, why would you aggravate him? I mean, you know, she thinks it's funny, but it isn't funny. And so she knows she brings it in here. I won't walk in the operatory. And yeah. I tell her assistant, she doesn't have a mirror, does she today? You know, she does. It's on the floor. I said, did you tell her? I will leave the room if she, you know, that's the extreme. She's, you know, she's a very unusual patient for me. But, you know, the expectations of the patients are unreal. And sometimes I say the term, you know, we're not gods in dentistry. You know, right. So we don't have enamel and dentin to recreate a tooth. We're using what we call quartz silicon glass, you know, so different materials in a glassy matrix or in a composite of a plastic matrix,
right?
To recreate tooth, you know, and so it's really incredible what we really can do in aesthetic dentistry or cosmetic.
It's incredible.
That's what I tell them. It's really incredible, but don't expect. You got to evaluate my work at an arm's length. That's where you need to evaluate my work, and that's where it should, you know, you shouldn't be able to see it, and. You know, that's hard to do on every patient. We were talking about before. They're squirming. They're doing this. They're doing that. Truthfully, the patients, you know, if I were to scratch their lip, this would be a catastrophic event in most of my patients' lives.
Right.
And so, yeah, they expect me to be perfect. And I'm not. I'm human, just like everyone else.
Yep. And I think that's something that needs to be brought in with patients is very often we have to have this conversation that, you know, these are two hands. I'm human. And maybe expectations are is that we can do something that is beyond what two hands can do. And so that's a conversation that I've had more than once with patients is that it's hands, right? I'm human, you know it. And we're trying to work with materials that are not nature, right? We're trying to simulate nature. One of the questions I have and one of the challenges that I have still in practice today after doing this for so long is still getting inside the patient's head of what their expectations are. And even though I've gone through provisionalization or we've gone through our prototype dentistry or transitional bonding, sometimes I think I have the patient figured out, they're happy with this, and then we go to the final delivery and they're just like, I just missed it. Have you had that happen and any advice on that?
Yeah, of course I've had it happen. You know, right. Anyone who tells you they haven't, they're lying. You know, I'll tell you that I haven't done a lot
there
of
you go.
You know, I hate to say that, but because I don't want to call him a liar, but you know, come on. But certainly it's happened to me several times. To be truthful, some of them have made complaints to the state board. I've always successfully defended my reputation because maybe one of the take home messages, because I have photographed cases. I can think of one individual who I had literally 50 pages of typed documentation of what I had done and what, you know, the issues that we were having with the patient. And I had something like 350 pictures, photographs of the case. And you know, a rational dentist who looks at that kind of documentation is probably going to have a hard time saying, hey, this dentist didn't give you his best effort. You know, this is in the right. zone of acceptability. You know, this is in the standard right. of dentistry. So one little tool that I do use, because I have a statement in my treatment plan letter that says with the fee includes two prototype approval appointments. Some patients require additional prototype approval appointments, okay, and or try-in appointments, and the fee is X number of dollars for 45 minutes. Okay? And I can share with the audience that which is a mind-boggling number, the most prototype modification approval appointments I've ever had is 30.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good grief.
Okay. And the truth of the matter is you, Dennis, I know you know the answer to this, but
that's a lot of stomach lining. I'm just telling you 30 prototype adjustments. Go ahead. Continue.
But where did the case end up at the end? Right where the prototypes were started.
Right.
I went back to the same design. Honestly, is really yep. where we went. Or, you know, I mean, a slight modification, of course.
Yeah.
But basically, we went back to that. But the and I learned the skill now, especially from that one case. But I charged the patient. I said, listen, it's in your contract. I'm going to charge you. And after about the fifth or seventh or tenth one, certainly I said, stop wasting your money, please.
Right.
Please, let's finish your case. No, Brian. And I said, here's the problem. And this is a problem with this type of personality in particular, which is patients, and I've said this to them, and I've said this to them when they have occlusal issues, and I've said this to them, especially in aesthetics world, which is they don't know if you just lengthen number seven a little bit, what effect that's going to have on the whole arrangement and composition that you've created. They have no way of knowing that. Now, Dennis, with your experience, my experience, we know, maybe the younger dentist, maybe not quite know that yet, but you know, after 5 years or so, they'll figure that out. You'll know what that change makes. And we're gonna struggle because I can lengthen it very easily, but you don't know what that's going to do to the rest of your smile. Right. Yes. I already know what it's going to look like, and that's not going to work well. And so there's the conversation I have with them is making that one little change. It's just not making that tooth longer. Everything now gets thrown into a mess sometimes, into unharmony, disarray.
They become their worst enemies in trying to control. And I think this gets back into control, which we talked about earlier in our conversation. I think very often, I mean, I had a patient that would come in with a number two pencil. And we had done a reconstruction, and she would come in, she'd have her mirror, and she would draw where she wanted me to highlight the line angles on her teeth. And she would just, you know, right here, right here, right here. And she would draw on the crowns with a pencil where she wanted me to change the contour. And that went on for multiple appointments until I had to start charging for her for it. And then she finally went off, and now she's somebody else's headache. But patients want to control, or some patients want to control to such a level. And I think that's where it gets challenging. I've even said to patients, here's the handpiece. Why don't you finish it up? Because you seem to know more about this than I do. And I know that's not the right thing to say, but at some point I'm just like, I don't know how else to make this better for you. Because they do. They just want to have the handpiece. They want to take over control. And that's a really tough thing for us to manage.
Very hard. And I tell them, you know, very similar to what you're saying, you know, we're artists, and you're tying the artist's hands. And how do you think that's going to, how would a sculpture, you know, you start telling a sculptor or a painter, you start tying their hands. I said, we're creative. I said, and you're paying me a lot of money. You're paying me for my years of expertise right. in this field and the art that I've learned of aesthetic dentistry. Why would you want to tie my hands? That's what I asked that question, you know?
I got to tell you, I like I said, it's tough enough in Glenview, Illinois. I can't even imagine in Beverly Hills. So God bless you. And I, I think it's getting harder and harder.
It's been a great career. Listen, you know, because I treat like the janitor of the building to, you know, Oscar winners and sure. athletes in town and such. I'll tell you this: the most of my A-list actors and actresses are actually some of my nicest patients. It's the sort of the ones that haven't quite made it to the big time that sometimes give us the hardest time.
Interesting.
You know, but yeah, most of my A-list patients are really, really appreciate what I do, and you know, they're artists too, and so they sort of get it a little sure. bit.
That's interesting. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to wrap this up. First of all, for those who don't know Brian, he's phenomenal. I mean, his composite dentistry and his porcelain work is just really beautiful. But so if you want to, Brian was teaching at his office before the whole COVID thing, that pandemic many of us heard about, rolled through our world. And I know you're getting that sort of back up and going. If people wanted to reach out to you, I know you're on Instagram and social media stuff, but what's the best way to reach out to you?
My email, you can just use my email. It's Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at cosmetic-dentistry.com. So just a dash. So Brian at cosmetic-dentistry.com. So I'm okay with you, you know, asking a question or something. And then the institute is bhide.info. So it's the Beverly Hills Institute of Dental Aesthetics. So B-H-I-D-E, we call it bhide for short, bhide.info. So the website is down, if you will, right now. I mean, it's up, but it's got just has old courses on it. So we'll probably run an occlusion course, which I know sounds really crazy, but a very practical occlusion course in the fall. And we run some composite courses. It looks like I'll be coming out to Cosmonet also, though, in the fall also, Dennis. So I'll be in your
neck awesome.
There doing a nice composite course. And so, you know, we'll be starting up the UCLA Aesthetic Continuum too, but got a small little institute here. You know, I handle anywhere from 5 to 15 doctors. Usually it's 5 to 12, honestly. So it's very individual, hands-on care, you know, and instruction for the people. So we do a lot of in the institute, and then we go into the operatories and do hands-on in the operatories and such, if it's a patient-type course.
Best way to learn, I was at Frank Spear's office when he first moved to Seattle, and there was 10 of us around an oval table. And man, yeah. I tell you, I still look back at those memories, and it makes me feel like Christmas morning when you get that type of experience. It's really phenomenal. So, and if you haven't been to Cosmonet, they got a great teaching center. It's right on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, overlooking the river. And they have limit to 15 students. It's a great educational facility and lots of great instructors like Brian at Cosmonet. So they don't support this podcast or anything by any stretch, but I use their materials, and they have great programs at their institute. So check them out too, and check Brian out when he's there in the fall. So
yeah,
Brian, leave us with some parting words. What are you thinking?
I think where we started, which is, you know yourself. And let your patients get to know you. So be yourself, though, really is the key. Where do you want to be in dentistry? So what kind of brand do you want to be? I knew that I wanted to try to be the best dentist I could. And we talked about, you know, we didn't really talk in depth, but Frank Spear was a big influence on my career also. Find a mentor. Find someone that you respect and follow them. Read and study as much as you can. Invest in yourself as much as you can. I think then you'll have a very fun time in dentistry, you know, because it's challenging. You can do DSO or you can do private practice kind of things, and you can choose. Both of them are options. You know, so which one do you want to be? And then set a path to how you're going to get there. But be yourself, you know, is really the key. Like we talked about, don't have fears. Try something new. Step out of your box. Get out of your comfort zone, because that's what we all had to do. If we didn't, we wouldn't be where we are. Dennis wouldn't be, you know, the fabulous dentist that he is either, and all the other dentists that you admire and respect. They had to step out of their comfort zone. So, you know, for me, that's really important. We talked about fears. But study, and invest in yourself, and you will have, honestly, you'll have a wonderful career. I've been doing it 40 years now, which wow. is crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
And patients ask me, Brian, you look, you know, when are you going to retire? I said, I don't have any intentions of retiring. I love what I do. I know Buddy's, you know, still practices a little bit. And
he's all done now, but he was grinding out for 50 plus. Yeah. A long time.
You know, my eyes are good. My hands are steady. Okay. Then I'm going to be doing dentistry. That's really not maybe as hard as I do right now, but I was made to be a dentist. That's it. I was just made to be a dentist. As crazy as that sounds, but those are the gifts and talents I think that God gave me. I hope you find the same passion for dentistry is really what I would say to any of the listeners out there. But it's not an easy journey. Study. I wish you a great career. That's really what I wish for you.
Yeah. Amen. I agree. It's a tough career, but it's so rewarding, but you got to dig deep and you got to really commit to learning more and working hard. And I think like your mom said, you got to give it your best effort, right? That's no truer words than the words come from our mothers.
Yeah.
Do your best, right? Do your best.
Yeah. Be honest, you know, do your best, be honest. You're allowed to make a mistake. You know, you are allowed to make a mistake, but admit to it. And I pull the chair around, sit down right in front of him, and I apologize when I do make a mistake. And sometimes it's just a little tiny tear on a lip somewhere that just, maybe I was taking a finishing strip and I just caught it. He went through the rubber dam even, you know, it's like, okay, you know, yeah, I did it. Sorry. You know?
Yep. Had to retake an impression on a single bicuspid this past week. I just told a patient I missed it. I didn't see it in the impression. I just missed the margin and the crown that came in, the lab did their job right. I just screwed up. I missed it. I got to take a new impression. I'm sorry. And you know what? You just got to be honest. You just, it's because I think if you're not, it's too much work trying to keep up with the lies. So you just, it's just easier, if, especially if you have a memory like mine, forget about it. So just be honest and just tell them, hey, you know what? But we'll make it right. And that's all and the patient said, look, I'm so grateful you're making it right. And that's all they want. Just make it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brian, I cannot thank you enough for hanging out with us and spending your time. This has been super delightful. And I was so grateful to hear some of your background, because I didn't know a lot of that. So I was super curious to hear how you had gotten out to LA and all that stuff. So what a great story about taking over the practice from that dentist who became sickly and taking that over in your journey and working two cities across the continent for a year, flying back and forth. So those of you who are tired of commuting, wake up and smell the coffee. It could be worse.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. I really appreciate you hanging out and joining us today.
Thank you, Dennis. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
All right. For Dental Online Trainers, thank you for joining us for the Sharecast. I look forward to seeing you at our next Sharecast. And of course, check out all our opportunities that we have through Dental Online Training. Check out our website, dothandson.com, and look forward to some of our courses that we have coming available. So until next time, yours for better dentistry, I'm Dr. Dennis Hartley. Well, thanks so much for listening or viewing our Sharecast today. If you enjoy this and you want to get more information from Dental Online Training, then check us out at dothandson.com. That's one word, dothandson.com. Now, as a reminder, DOT has so many other great opportunities for your learning. We have our Wine and Unwind monthly webinars, where we engage real time with our viewers as we bring in leaders throughout the dental industry to bring you up-to-date information and answer your questions. We have our monthly coffee and donut study club sessions, where our participants bring in cases and we treatment plan these cases together to help you bring great treatment to your patients. We have our live virtual workshops, where our dental online trainers perform the same techniques from their kits as I'm doing from the comfort of their own home or office. We have our blogs, and we have endless selection of our hands-on pre-recorded technique courses to help you improve the clinical dentistry they can provide for your patients. That's right. With our on-demand courses, you do these hands-on exercises when the time is right for you. So check us out on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Dental Online Training. And hey, be sure to share this with your friends and colleagues who you think might benefit from the Sharecast and everything that DOT has to offer. And now, how about one of those coveted 5-star ratings? Please go to your site and help us by getting the word out to others. And we'd welcome one of those wonderful 5-star ratings. This episode was created with special help from Claire O'Neill. It was edited by Ashley Dixon Ellison and with original music by Chris Peterson. Again, thank you for listening. I'm Dr. Dennis Hartley, yours for better dentistry.